This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. We have had an interesting couple of days. And it ain't over yet. We are in the middle. Bunches and bunches of people at my major client are off in Orlando because they're having their biennial, every 2 years, their biennial get-together, their biennial general council, it's called. And it takes a lot of personnel to put one of these things on, and so there's just a whole bunch of people who are down in Orlando and doing all that kind of stuff. Okay, it's great, fine, dandy, we've done this before. Well, for some reason, and somehow it feels like it's connected. We haven't figured out how yet. For some reason, the little web store that I wrote for the company back in 1998, which is, you know, over 20 years old now, that has kind of been hacked and patched on and blah, blah, blah. And the recent hack and patch was to convert it to use something called Secure Acceptance. It's written in Cold Fusion. And that, you know, that went fine. When we first deployed it, we were getting a lot of just weird errors. And then we just kind of decided to let the thing run. And then it kind of resolved itself, and we'd get a sporadic error out of the Secure Acceptance side of it here and there, but, you know, nothing too bad. And then recently, like within the last month, we've gotten surges. So there'll be like, I think it's happened two or three times, where there'll be a couple of hours where we'll get an error every 15 minutes from the Secure Acceptance stuff. And, you know, and then after a couple hours, it settles down and everything's quiet again, and then we go another week. Well, we had gone for 3 weeks or so, no problems, we were just puttering along, you know, it's okay, great. So yesterday, the errors started up, I don't know, about 10:30 or so, and I was like, well, that's fine, you know, we'll go for a couple hours and then it'll settle back down. It didn't settle back down until, no, it started up around 2 yesterday. Didn't settle back down until about 10 o'clock at night. And I was like, whoa, that was 8 hours. And there was, you know, just here and there, sporadic errors about every 15 minutes. And some of them meant that we had actually pre-authed cards twice, which is not good. So we tracked all those down and reversed all those pre-auths. And, you know, and then it's like, so what just changed there? Nothing that we could tell. So we're kind of hoping that that was just going to settle itself down. Well, it didn't today. It did at night from about 10 to about, for 12 hours, we were pretty quiet. And then about 10:30 today, it started back up again. And it basically went all day. So I had some other things to get done, got those things done, and then I spent a good portion of the afternoon just researching, trying to figure out what in the world is going on. Never came up with anything. Eliminated a bunch of stuff. Found out that there are, for some reason, companies that have just been pinging us on a particular page, on a particular storefront, because the store I wrote them has multiple storefronts, so you can design multiple storefronts. They all look like different stores, but they actually are all using the same back end and same order processing features and blah, blah, blah. Pretty much didn't get anywhere today. But, you know, it's like, well, the code base hasn't changed, and the, you know. So who knows? Who knows? So I took my best run at it, and, you know, I told him I'd hop on Friday and just look at the stuff that was the after errors, after we come back after pre-authing, and then, you know, see if some of the more of those need to be rolled back. And then we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. So, anyways, and I've been working with, you know, a couple of the other guys there, too, and we're all just looking at each other going, well, you know, so we got in touch with our network guys. Of course, they're all out at Orlando. They hadn't had a chance to see anything there yet. I mean, we're honestly to the place that we're one of those, well, have you rebooted your machine, you know, or we're just, that's what I told the guys when I left. I said, maybe we're just to the point where we should just have John restart Cold Fusion, and if that doesn't do it, maybe we should just reboot that machine and see if that does it. Because something is, it's not, it's, yeah. Anyways, so that's that. The writing is going fine. I'm at that point where I gotta wrap it up now. And I have a little bit more story to tell. I'm just gonna try to decide how much story I'm gonna tell. Because I've started chapter 27, and theoretically these go to 30, and it's not going to end up at 30. It's probably going to end up at 32 chapters or so. And then I still have to write the epilogue and the final, we call them the news feeds. There's one or two chapters in these book that are just like memos going between departments or PR releases and that kind of stuff, and that just helps me get through a lot of information quickly and kind of helps you see behind the scenes with some of the stuff that's going on. So I usually write that really fast, though, so that'll go quick. And I think I've got a good epilogue, you know, haven't written it yet, but I think it's okay. So I think I'm pretty well on track. Obviously, it's August now, and this book is supposed to be wrapped up at the latest by the end of August. You know, so we'll see. We'll see. I think I'm on track. This book better not have another 40,000 words in it, because I'm already up to 130 some odd thousand words, and this thing is only supposed to go to 150, but, you know, we'll see. I may be at 160. We'll see. It's fine. Looking forward to a good weekend. Have breakfast with friends this weekend. Got a breakfast tomorrow morning. Got a breakfast Saturday morning. Running sound for church on Sunday, so that'll all be fine. It's interesting. I have done enough outfits for enough holidays now that people are kind of clued into the fact that I might do something for something if someone tells me something. So the friend I'm having breakfast with on Saturday, he's actually been in on several of the dress-up days. I think he was on Leprechaun Day, and he was on Easter Bunny Day, which I think someone said I should call Hoppy Easter, and then he was in on another one as well. Oh, Star Wars Day. I think he was in on Star Wars Day, too, which was the tutu. And the reason he was in on those days is because I was actually scheduled to have breakfast with other people, and they couldn't make it. And so at the last minute, I called this particular buddy and said, hey, you want to get together tomorrow? I said, it's such and such a day. He's like, I don't care. So this one, though, wasn't one of those. It was just going to be a regular day. So I hadn't seen him in a while, and I texted him yesterday. I said, hey, it's regular day on Saturday. Do you want to get some breakfast? You got some time? And so he had to check with his wife, and he did. He said, yeah, that'll be great. But then he wrote back and he said, and it's National Mustard Day on Saturday. And I thought, what? National Mustard Day? Of course, then, oh, okay, now it's National Mustard Day. You got to do something. And as it turns out, I had been investigating doing an outfit for next Easter because the title of the outfit was Happy Happy from the Easter Egghead. And it's like this whole thing, but I needed a yellow full kind of unitard thing. And so I just ordered one from eBay just to try it out and see what that looked like. I already had this full body yellow suit with the, you know, head enclosure and everything, although it has open face on it. And, you know, I basically just need a yellow t-shirt, which I've ordered overnight, because I found some deals on Amazon where the same price, they would just deliver it for free in one day. And it was like, hey, you know, and ordered some shorts as well. And I've got some yellow shoes. And so I thought I'll just go all in yellow for Mustard Day. Plus, I'm going to get some red vinyl iron-on material and make a French's mustard logo and put it on the t-shirt and it on the shorts. Because we actually have here in town a French's mustard factory, or a French's product factory. So figured I could do that. And so here I just thought I was going to have a regular breakfast with him, and then all of a sudden it turns into something else, which is fine. It's fine. You know, life, it's fun. So I'm going to be the equivalent of a yellow mustard container on Saturday for breakfast. So there you go. And if I had known farther in advance, there's actually, I think Heinz has made mustard ice cream. So, but it's only going to be sold in New York and Los Angeles. So anyways, that would be quite the taste, mustard ice cream. Anyway, so all is well, all is well. Things are puttering along. You know, all we can do every day is just take it one moment at a time and do the best we can do. Move forward. So that's what we're doing. So writing's good. Family is good. Breakfasts are good. Breakfasts are always good. Work is good. It's good. All is well. Today, I came across this article, and I had heard about this before, and I should say right now, if you are squeamish at all, if you don't really like hearing about horror stories, especially real life horror stories, you should really just stop right now. You should just shut off this podcast, because I came across an article on a further discovery of the zombie ant syndrome. And it's pretty gruesome. I'm just telling you right now, this is live, true to life, and it's pretty gruesome. And I was reading through it, and I was like, wow, wow. And so then I did some research to kind of get myself more acquainted with it, and it went back before the particular article I was looking at. And I don't think I've ever done a podcast on the fungus that turns ants into zombie ants. So I thought, you know, there is something we can learn from this, I think. And I think at the end of the day, it comes down to our limited conceptions about who our God is. So here's the deal. This was I started with an article called Now We Know How the Zombie Ant Gets Its Bite. That was by Matt Simon. And I don't have the title of the other article, but I just did a search for zombie ants and picked the first one that came up. And it's really interesting. So they talk in this article that if you want to find the most sinister examples of mind control. Okay, and fair warning, this gets pretty gruesome. So this gets pretty gruesome. Stop now. You really don't have to look to science fiction for sinister examples of mind control. And one of the most fascinating ones is if you go to a tropical country, they said, like Brazil, and you venture deep into the jungle, they said you need to find a leaf that's hanging almost exactly 25 centimeters above the forest floor. You don't want to find one more than that. You don't want to find one less than that. And then you start looking under those leaves that are 25 centimeters off the forest floor. He said, if you're in luck, you might find an ant clinging to the leaf's central vein, jaws clamped tight for dear life on this vein. The thing about it is that ant's life is already over. Because the reason he is at 25 centimeters and the reason he has his jaws clamped on the central vein on the underside of that leaf is because its body, the ant's body, belongs to a fungus. And I am not going to be able to pronounce this, but it's Ophiocordyceps unilateralis, the zombie ant fungus. So what basically happens here is this fungus infects carpenter ants, and it grows inside the insect's body, drains it of its nutrients, apparently, although we don't know for sure, hijacks its brain. Over the course of a week, it compels the ant to leave the safety of its nest and ascend to a nearby plant stem. It stops the ant at a height of 25 centimeters, a zone with precisely the right temperature and humidity for the fungus to grow. It forces the ant to permanently lock its mandibles around a leaf, around a leaf. Eventually, this is the gross part, eventually it sends a long stalk through the ant's head, growing into a bulbous capsule full of spores. And because the ant typically climbs a leaf that overhangs its colony's foraging trails, the fungal spores rain down onto its sisters below, zombifying them in turn. What? What in the world? What in the... This is so fascinating. Okay, so... So, of course, scientists have been fascinated by this. Trying to figure out how in the world does this fungus get this ant to behave in such a specific manner. So, of course, scientists have been studying this. They've been looking at the ant's bodies. They've been using, you know, what, electron microscopes and that kind of thing. And they've been, you know, using artificial intelligence to try to distinguish between what's happening internally in the pictures. Actually, they used a special microscope to julienne infected ants into slices that were just 50 nanometers thick, a thousandth of the width of a human hair. Then they scanned each slice, then they put it back together, use artificial intelligence, blah, 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 blah. So this is what they think is happening. So they think when the fungus first enters the host, it exists as a single cell. As single cells that just float around in the bloodstream. Okay, so these single cells are just hanging out, float around in the bloodstream. But a few new copies here, new copies there. Just keep budding copies. I'm getting my mail. One moment. In time, though, they start interlinking. So in time, this fungus starts to interlink. And as it's interlinking, then they connect to form some tubules. I just got a notification for my dad's placard that he had for handicap, but we don't need that anymore. So once they start connecting together, they build these short tubes. And apparently, these little short tubes, as they all start connecting and interconnecting and interconnecting. And by the way, this is similar to what the fungi do, some fungi do in plants, but this has never been seen in any kind of insects or animals before. Okay, so once they all hook up, then they can exchange nutrients and they can communicate via chemicals. So they also start at that point invading the ant's muscles, either by penetrating the muscle cells themselves or growing into the spaces between them. The result is what, well, they've got a video. So the result is that you see these tubules all intertwined with the muscles. And they said this is something unique to this particular fungus. Hughes's team found that another parasitic fungus, which fatally infects ants but doesn't manipulate their mind, also spreads into muscles but doesn't form tubes between the individual cell and doesn't wire itself into large networks. Okay, so somehow this fungus does this. And somehow, then it functions in a way that it can control the ant's muscles. And this was actually what the original article I looked at, the later article, was talking about, because these tubules not only infiltrate muscles, but they also degrade, I think they said, some of the nerve endings. So that these nerves fire off and make the ant bite the leaf. And they said, surprisingly, they can do this without ever physically touching the brain itself. Hughes' team found that the fungal cells infiltrate the ant's entire body, including its head, but they leave the brain untouched. So, in retrospect, that makes sense. Quote, if parasites were merely invading and destroying neuronal tissues, I don't think the manipulated behaviors that we observe would be as compelling as they are, says Carissa DeBecker from the University of Central Florida. Something much more intricate must be going on. She notes that the fungus secretes a wide range of chemicals that could be influencing the brain from afar. So here we have, what we have here is a hostile takeover of a uniquely malevolent kind. enemy forces invading a host body and using that body like a walkie-talkie to communicate with each other and influence the brain from afar. Hughes thinks the funguses might also exert more direct control over the ants' muscles, literally controlling them, quote, as a puppeteer controls a marionette doll. Once the infection is underway, he says, the neurons in the ant's body, the ones that give its brain control over its muscles, start to die. Hughes suspects that the fungus takes over. It effectively cuts off the ant's limbs from its brain and inserts itself in place, releasing chemicals that force the muscles there to contract. If this is right, then the ant ends its life as a prisoner in its own body. Its brain is still in the driver's seat, but the fungus has the wheel.
Oh, man.
Okay, so, you know, the first question that comes to mind in reading this is, okay, so how did this come about? 25 centimeters. Underside of a leaf, over the trails of your fellow ant colony. That's really specific. Growing between muscles, somehow manipulating the muscles. This is a fungus, okay? This is not like some higher order. This is a fungus. Manipulating the muscles, coordinating the climbing, or at the very least, excreting chemicals that somehow convince the ant that they should climb up. And then at just the right time, when the head is positioned just the right way, taking control of the mandibles to clamp down and destroy the ant's ability to release itself from that. How in the world did this just come about? The other option, though, is uncomfortable as well, because we don't necessarily like to think about a god who would design something like this. Makes us uncomfortable. And that's because I think we want God to be a God of love. We want God to be a God who never does anything that kind of gives us the shivers. Many years ago, I developed a little saying, having looked at some of the things that had happened in my life, with the caveat that my life has been wonderful. I've had a little pain here and there, physical, emotional, but my life has been wonderful. Still, even in that little bit of pain that I've had, as you have pain in life, people typically need to find a way to justify that pain. And one of the ways that I justified that pain was to tell myself that God is more awesome and terrible than I am comfortable believing. And I see that in this. That this is an astonishing thing. And to think that that type of fungus can exist and manipulate an ant, you just wonder, because then you extrapolate and you think, is there a possibility that there is some fungus somewhere that could do something similar to humans? And maybe there already is, and I just haven't seen the article. But it's really interesting to think about the fact that this whole mechanism is complex enough that, at least in my mind, it gives rise to the idea that, you know, it didn't just happen, it was designed. And then if it was designed, of course, then you have to have come to grips with the fact that God is more terrible and awesome than we are comfortable believing. But it's an interesting thing to think about. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.